That the Spirit.
Hello, Professor Peter Lynam, are you there?
I am here, yes indeed. How are you going, Johnny?
I'm good. No, we missed a week last week because you were in the air, flying back from Christchurch or somewhere?
Wellington, yes. Desperately hard doing research on every possible topic for this program, naturally. But today was not the result of that, because the reason was that on the 21st of May, somebody died who's of great significance in religion, and that is Rosemary Radford Reuther, I think a German name, though she's an American. And I thought it would be just interesting to talk about this great Catholic feminist,
yes,
who's been enormously influential in a lifetime.
Cast out from the Catholic Church, but...
Well, she always said she was a Catholic. She never rejected, as some of the other... I mean, there was quite a group in the 60s and 70s of radical Catholic feminists who really set the mark in religious studies for reinterpreting religion along feminist lines.
Yes.
And Rosemary Radford Reuther was one of those people, perhaps a little bit after Mary Daly, who's probably the most famous of them all, and Elizabeth Fiorenza. But she always still said she was a Catholic.
I found a New York Times article about it, and there's a quote from her at the very end of the article where she says, "As a feminist, I can come up with only one reason to stay in the Catholic Church, to try and change it."
Yes. And did she succeed? Well, the answer is, to be honest, no. In some ways, I'd say Catholic feminists are less bold today than they were in the period of her greatest writings, you know, when she was writing in the 1980s and 90s, where she was attacking just about every structure in the church. And, of course, she taught not from a Catholic institution, but from, ironically, a Methodist institution, a theological college, where she was greatly respected. But her writings have had an enormous influence. I mean, I read just this afternoon to prepare for this an essay that she wrote on ecofeminism, and she is talking about the way in which the despoiling of the environment is a result of a male modeled dominant view of, you know, that humans have complete charge, especially males have complete charge of the environment, and as a result there is a wrecking of the environment that goes on.
Were there three prominent lines of thinking based around feminism, anti-racism, and environmental perspectives?
Yes, that's true. She particularly, though, also explored female ideas of God. And could God be understood as female? And I think some of that writing, and she's not the only one of these radical writers to have explored this, I think these had great influence, because she connected in with the kind of Gaia theme that is very popular in the feminist world as a kind of eco-spiritual aspect to the universe. And she shaped that and expressed that. And she argued that, in fact, this was the original religion of Christianity, which has got destroyed and wrecked and distorted because the men very promptly took over and removed all the radical tendencies that were there. She's it's interesting because she's not a lesbian, not a nun, never been in a religious order, has worked very hard alongside sort of standard American themes of a liberation theology, particularly connecting firstly to black people, and so hence the anti-racist theme, which she's been very concerned about. But what she's done, I think, she's got a way of writing that turns complex ideas into kind of accessible ideas.
Yes.
And we have to appreciate that, because sometimes this language can be so technical that you feel as though you don't know what's going on. I really recommend reading Roitha, because she is so willing to challenge our assumptions and leave us thinking, you know, why didn't I see that? It's an interesting question whether it would be possible to completely transform your view of God into a female model.
How do I need to change my thinking to shift towards
part of it is a problem with pronouns. You know, that in English, we've gone through a massive change in our use of pronouns about ordinary life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we're much more cautious and accepting, and increasingly, in the last few years, of course, moving to the use of their and they, when people aren't prepared to choose a gendered pronoun. Doing that about God seems to be provocative in a lot of eyes. I'm not sure whether they're contending that God has male organs or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It probably isn't that. But it does seem as though, for some people, that's kind of very deep in their understanding of God, is the male pronoun.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often
kind of like a Santa-looking character, big white beard.
Yes.
Rosy.
Yes, and maybe inherited so early in your life. You can't shift that pronoun around it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Roitha goes one step further. She not only proposes neutralizing the pronoun, she says that we actually need to recover the female pronouns and use them emphatically and clearly and strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been liberating for some women theologians. And it has produced a certain amount of use of them in kind of a mixed he/she, you know, when you talk about God, and that's becoming a little bit common in Christian worship, but it's still probably on the very provocative end of statements. You're not going to get the people at Arise Church using female pronouns for God, I assure you.
we've had a text come through, Peter, saying, "Why on earth do we think we can assign God any kind of gender at all?"
Well, that is true. In fact, the language of gender shouldn't really be there for God.
Mm.
But one of the interesting factors historically is that the Jewish religion faced off against very stronger gendered traditional religion.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at, say, Maori culture, and it's very clear which are the male gods and which are the female gods.
Yes.
And similarly in Greek society and in early Phoenician society, the world that Judaism emerged from. And the thing about monotheism is presumably God moves apart from that kind of male-female language, but you have to call this God something.
Mm.
And the tendency to use male language suggested that males were in control.
Yes.
You know, of the imagery.
Like a strength thing or a power thing.
Oh, precisely.
Here's our God.
Precisely.
He's powerful. Yes.
Yes. And so a whole lot of adjectives flow along with the pronoun.
Yeah.
In the process, all sorts of other aspects like God, love, care, compassion, etc., all become second order descriptions of God.
Mm.
And how on earth do you reshape that? And Roitha believed that the challenge was to actually put it out there and to force the issue, because only by endlessly provoking people was there any hope of change.
Mm.
And I think, you know, she was right that we are so conservative in notions in religion. Religion is inherently very conservative,
mm-hmm.
and it needs shaking up all the time.
Yes.
The sad thing to me is that shaking up has still left a lot of conservatism behind it, and the new prophets don't seem to be about as much as they used to be.
Mm. I guess another interesting thing about her is, as a Catholic, she was staunchly in favor of abortion rights.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. She left no room for doubt on that subject. One of the earliest things she wrote on and got into trouble about. That's why she could never get a job in a Catholic theological institution.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and again, that's a highly key issue today with the Roe versus Wade legislation. Well, court ruling probably about to be overruled. It's troubling that you think there's a tendency and a trajectory for change
mm-hmm.
that's going to happen. And then suddenly we discover that there's quite conservative factors still in Western society.
Yes.
And we get pulled back quite powerfully. Maybe radicalism has moved on to new subjects. It's just given up on religion altogether.
I mean, I feel like throughout the decades that she was most active, surely there would have been the impetus or that that change happening, but it is interesting to reflect back on it and say, oh, wow, you know, she's done all this important work, but in the long run, not actually much has changed, which is kind of a bit depressing.
Yeah, especially in the Catholic Church, where to even do the most minor change, allowing women to be readers, caused the electors in the church caused enormous controversy. And so, you know, institutions as powerful and as patriarchal as that seem to be built to resist.
Yes.
And in the long run, the resistors just have to hold their ground.
Peter, I know we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but shall we pencil in having a chat about the rise of the super conservative religious right? Was that our...
We do need to, because that's a framer on the other side, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
sure. And yes, I think, well, the new conservatives, well, they're certainly about, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And getting big audiences as well.
Yeah.
And we need to understand what the appeal is.
Do we think it's... Someone did text in after we spoke the other week and said it's as simple as fear. People are just afraid, and that's what drives it. Is it that? Can you boil it down to that?
Perhaps, but I think the other factor is that when, well, things change when there's room to move.
Yes.
And it feels as though Western society doesn't have as much room to move and to be creative as it once had.
Totally.
And, I'm fearful in the New Zealand context, where you can see that a kind of anti-Māori, anti-multicultural faction could easily grow stronger because they just need to portray all Māori as gang members.
Yes.
And suddenly we move, the terms of the game change completely.
Mm-hmm.
And political parties, you know, even the National Party, which has stood pretty firmly pro-Treaty Waitangi, could easily move.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't take much. Drum up some fear and you're off.
I'm afraid not. I'm afraid not. Mm. And that's what we've got to be alert to.
For sure. All right, Peter. Hey, thank you very much for another fantastic edition of That's the Spirit. We'll check in with you next week, mate.
Look forward to it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.